Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hey, Barbie.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Barbie. And welcome back to Film Posers, four Boricuas ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. My name is Juan Mojica, and I am joined by my lovely co-hosts, Josie Melendez, Gabriela Burgos, and Ana Sofia Cintro Mediavilla. And today, we're going to be discussing the cinematic phenomenon that took the summer by storm, Barbenheimer. That's right. If you weren't a part of Barbenheimer, baby, you are not a part of the conversation. Everyone I know was talking about Barbenheimer. Either they saw half of Barbenheimer, both films, or you just weren't a baddie like us. And you know what? Live your life. But we did too. So we're going to be talking about the entire Barbenheimer experience from our own perspectives, as well as what we thought of both movies. And by the end, you may even find out which one we like better and which one right now is on our higher section of our best films of 2023 list. Quite an exciting time. And thank you so much for sticking with us. We are back. We are better than ever. And what better way to kick off our return than with Barbenheimer? A film, more than a film, an experience that brought back so many great things that we used to love going to the movies for. You got to dress up for the film. You were either in black because you were in suits to go see Oppenheimer. You felt serious. You maybe had a big ass hat on, or you were in all pink for Barbie because you know what? It's a great time to get all pinked out for Barbie. And you know what? Capitalism won. Capitalism truly won when it came to Barbenheimer, because those stores were selling out those clothes. They couldn't sell them faster. I know, I used to work retail, and I'm kind of glad I didn't work Barbenheimer.
We set back socialism for 30 years.
Oh, yeah. We did, but baddies only. So it also brought back taking photos of our experience at the theater, including this beautiful Barbie box that we got in Caribbean Cinemas. I know it was in the States too. It got there first, yes, for sure. And of course, you posed in the box, just like your Barbie doll. And you know what? It was a great time. From my perspective, though, I think this is something that studios need to start bringing back, making films feel like special events that you just cannot miss. I mean, let's talk about a film real quick that could have capitalized on that, Blue Beetle. I mean, come on. No one thought dress on all blue for Blue Beetle. Someone dropped the ball in marketing. But this is also great because going forward, this is something that's going to go down as one of the coolest events in pop culture history in the 2020s. I think that's a fair statement to say here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what made Barbenheimer the phenomenon it is that it wasn't planned. You know, it was a coincidence. Now people are trying to make like Paw Patrol and Saw a thing.
And I'm definitely going to watch it.
Saw Patrol.
I mean, yeah, it did start as a social media trend. Were you team Barbie? Were you team Oppenheimer? Were you seeing both films in the same day? And Oppenheimer low-key piggybacked off of this because they didn't run that much of a marketing campaign as Barbie did.
Okay, but that's because Barbie didn't have like movie marketing budget. They had Mattel.
Oh yeah,
sure. That's why their marketing was so good. That wasn't production money, that was Mattel money.
I feel like the rumors were also that they put Oppenheimer the same day as Barbie because they thought it was gonna ruin like the grand day, but it worked in their favor.
That's true. Oh, yeah. That did start as spite for Christopher Nolan leaving Warner Brothers because of Tenet and all the issues that happened post Tenet. And he went to Universal. Universal gave him the money, and they said, I want to go up against Warner Brothers and damage the film that I know could be a huge hit for them. Yet they both benefited out of it.
Yeah. Literally. This is the most money a Christopher Nolan movie has made since Batman.
Yeah, it's his most profitable non-Dark Knight film.
Yeah, ever. It just beat out Inception.
That's huge. And even then, this started out as spite, yet this came into something quite iconic.
Let's see. It's one of those things where I remember when they were promoting the respective films, a lot of publicists or a lot of interviewers were asking them, like, what do you think about the whole Barbenheimer thing? Trying to frame it like it was a competition. And they were like, it's no. Like, we're going to support each other's films. That's the whole point. It wasn't a competition, no matter how many people tried to pit the two movies against each other. It was a cultural event. That's why Barbenheimer existed. Because film Twitter was like, this is the moment.
It was, literally. Yeah, I haven't had fun on film Twitter since 2019.
Yeah.
Ekkadidharma the Barbenheimer became a thing because of film Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Impact.
I think that's the biggest impact I think film Twitter has had on a conversation like that since 2019 and Parasite winning Best Picture. Those are the last big moments, like huge moments.
Yeah, because now the ones that are like bandwagoning the conversations are not people that love film, but also like, you know, casual moviegoers or so went to see Barbie and Oppenheimer to get the full experience.
You didn't want to miss out on it.
Mm-hmm. No, like for example, in my case, I did not do the infamous Barbenheimer double feature, mostly because I could not book the two movies on the same day. So I saw a Barbie screening first, then I went to see the movie again in theaters when it came out, and then I was able to snag tickets for Oppenheimer, but it was very difficult because it was sold out in New York for weeks, right until the middle of August, so I ended up seeing it second row in IMAX.
The 70mm?
No, so 70mm hubo un chisme con eso, because the 70mm in AMC Lincoln Square got ruined. Yeah. So they were still promoting the 70mm screening, but they weren't screening the 70mm. They were just screening regular IMAX. I think it got fixed eventually, and they added more dates recently. Pero sí, hubo un chisme con eso, because some people screened the movie, and then they realized they didn't see 70mm, and they wanted their money back.
I saw 70mm.
Must have been an experience.
You really said, I am a Christopher Nolan girl through and through.
Said, I become the film bro.
I have become the destroyer of film Twitter.
So my thing was, I saw Oppenheimer one day, and then I saw Barbie the next day, and I saw Barbie again the next day. Bro. That was my Barbenheimer.
Bro, I couldn't see it at the same day because of logistics, but also yeah. IMAX
logistics got us, bro.
Yeah, the logistics got us. Okay,
that's true, because there are two here, but only one was showing Oppenheimer. The other, Tom Cruise loves Plaza Carolina, because Plaza Carolina had Mission Impossible playing in IMAX when Oppenheimer was on for a couple of weeks. Like, Tom Cruise is gonna premiere a film in Plaza Carolina. Like, mark my words.
He won one. En verdad, metieron la pata. Whoever decided to put Mission Impossible justamente antes de Barbenheimer.
Literally.
And it's such a good film, too. That's a shame. But back to Barbenheimer. Anna, how was your experience?
I had a good experience. I dressed up in pink. Everybody was dressed up in pink. Everything was pink, except when I went to, like, the IMAX. It was so packed, but you could see the people, like, the difference. They get, okay, y'all dressed in black, you're gonna be with me in the Oppenheimer experience. And it was great. I liked it. I enjoyed my experience a lot.
In my case, the week of Barbenheimer, I had just gotten back from Italy. I had to get over my jet lag.
Do the Europe plug. Do the Europe plug. Did you know I was in Europe?
I had a European summer vacation, and I will not apologize for it.
He had his Lizzie McGuire era.
I was in my Lizzie McGuire era, and I'm proud of it.
Yes, you should.
Well, that's the thing. I had been planning that trip for 3 years. I was supposed to take it, and then the pandemic hit. So I've been holding off on that trip since 2020. It was going to be like now or never. I just finished my master's. It was happening. And then I got back. I have to get over my jet lag, which European jet lag is no joke. Like, it can kick your ass for so long. I had to get over that in 48 hours, be there at Barbie for the opening day, which best cinematic experience I've had possibly since Avengers Endgame. Like, my crew was all dressed out. We, like, turned it out. But my audience? They were the absolute best, and I genuinely believe it's because it was mainly female, and everyone was there because everyone just wanted to see Barbie, wanted to have a great time, Everyone was complimenting each other on the outfit. There was lines just to have the photo taken in the Barbie box, even though my crew and I did complain about one particular group of people who, you know, could not get it together for the life of them. But that's a different issue. Barbie, for me, just got the assignment right in my screening, and everyone had an amazing time. Everyone clapped, cried, laughed. It was amazing. And then I saw Barbie again the next day. So there I am Thursday and Friday seeing Barbie. And then I saw Oppenheimer on Saturday in IMAX. Even though I had to buy the ticket like Wednesday night, because they did a pre-sale here for Barbie like a week in advance, which I'll take it. They don't really do that often for films here. But Oppenheimer didn't get that same luxury. They basically said, you all want tickets to Oppenheimer? Fight to the death. At 8:30 the night before.
Day before, bro.
And they were like, oh yeah, regular screenings are out. But no. There are people on film Twitter like, no. I am here to fight for Nolan in IMAX. I must give this man my $15. And they were clawing at each other for those dates. Like, the system kept crashing. It was insane. My Saturday screening was almost full on Wednesday. Like, it's insane. So I didn't see it the same day either, but low-key, I was better off seeing it the way I did. I enjoyed my screenings more that way. So, of course, we just answered the question, did you partake in the double feature? Most of us did not.
Yeah. But
do you feel you missed out in not doing the double feature?
No, it was a lot. Era bien cargado, you know, tamente again. I think the logistics were against us because it was such a cultural event. Pero yo me la viví. Yo me la disfruté. I was happy with at least seeing the movies. That was my priority. I wanted to at least see them.
I feel like we were just pressured to, like, follow the meme.
Yeah, but again, I heard from so many people that did do it that they were drained. I mean, las películas son fuertes.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that at least, like, I got to see them, like, one day from each other. You know, I saw Oppenheimer, like, the night before, and then I saw Barbie the following night. So I like that at least they were semi-close to each other.
Yeah, it took me a while to watch them, and I was sad because I wanted to be part of the conversation. But I watched them. That's what matters. But I think if I would have done the double feature, I would have done Oppenheimer first and then Barbie, because I like how energized you feel after Barbie. Oppenheimer, yeah. I just wanted to smoke a cigarette.
Literally, like, Oppenheimer, I was like, I need a shot of whiskey and three cigarettes, which are not even two things that I don't partake in.
A cigar.
I left Oppenheimer shaken to my core. Like, the train ride back home after Oppenheimer was just silent. Like, just dead silence, staring into the vast nothingness. That's how I felt after Oppenheimer. It's Meanwhile, like, after Barbie, I was in my pink outfit, ugly crying.
When I got on my from watching Oppenheimer, it was raining, and you could just, like, and the drum.
Can you hear the music, Anna?
Can you hear the music in the background? It's like, damn, I feel like I am in the Oppenheimer.
So now that we've gotten a little bit more into Oppenheimer, let's start by talking about Oppenheimer, because this is a three-hour film, which low-key I was against seeing, because 3 hours in a film, that's hard on me, but it didn't really feel like 3 hours.
It's a lot. I'm going to have to start wearing compression socks to the theater. I don't want to feel that old.
Chelsea.
Es verdad. You're sitting for 3 hours. Think about the people.
I mean, yeah, and if it's in IMAX with all these people, imagine if you're in the middle and one of them has to go to the bathroom and it's, like, close to you. Think of all the people they have to cross in front of.
Exactly. I'm an aisle seat girly. You're not catching me in a three-hour flick sitting a dead ass in the middle.
I'm an aisle boy, and I had to sit towards the middle. Like, it was one of the best seats you could find. Like, that was essentially it.
I was sitting in the middle, second row for Oppenheimer.
It's okay. I missed the first 25 minutes of the film, so...
It
was the popcorn line. It was insane.
Okay, and I'm low-key against movies being 3 hours long. However...
Speak your truth.
However, I enjoyed watching Oppenheimer. Y fue última tanda. and I wasn't sleepy at all, okay? So
that's a huge accomplishment for you. You're usually out by like 9 p.m.
You exactly. got out of that theater at 12.
Exacto. So I was so engaged by the movie. I was like, you know what? I'm a let it pass the 3 hours. I'm gonna let it pass, okay? Just for you, Nolan, this time.
This time, I will say Oppenheimer. I missed the first 25 minutes, but I caught up. But then I walk into the IMAX screen, and the first scene I'm seeing is of my queen, Florence Pugh. And this is not how I was expecting to see her on the first scene.
No, so tú me estás diciendo that you walked into that theater
with hot popcorn.
With hot popcorn, because the line was too long at the concession stand to see Florence Pugh on the big screen, titties out.
Yeah.
That's, oh my God.
Riding the oppie, if you will.
Why? I am sorry, but I want you started to recite the book. I was like, I'm out. Why? how is this turning him on? I don't even know.
He's a man of literature.
Oh my God.
And we see not once, but twice. Twice.
The interrogation scene. In front of poor Emily Blunt.
No, let's not talk about the interrogation scene.
I was just like, sir, Nolan, what are you doing?
I didn't mind. It just felt weird. But I also feel like the awkwardness was because of the kind of relationship that they had. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I just, no sé, it just, I don't know if it's that Nolan didn't know how to write it in because it just felt out of place.
It just felt like for shock value at that moment.
Oh, yeah. And I will say, I kind of am surprised that Florence Pugh's main scenes, for the most part, she just didn't have clothes on. Which, like you said, it's the nature of the character and the relationship, but I kind of felt like you could have given Florence Pugh something else to do, like something more important.
Yeah, I think that's
and clothed.
What bothered me, because she's such a good actress, and you literally just gave her that. But, I mean, she said she didn't mind. She was like, anything you give me is fine with me. So, if she was happy, I'm happy.
Yeah, that was my point, too. That's what I'm going to end up being with. Like, if that's what she was okay with doing, and she wasn't forced to do anything, I'm glad. Because, like you said, Florence Pugh, incredible actress, deserves the world, deserves many Oscars. And if she gets one for this film, I won't mind. But I think it's because I've come to expect such great monologue moments from Florence Pugh, and she has top billing, that for her to be just in those scenes, it kind of just felt like, are you wasting her talent? Like, low-key.
Yeah, she's more than just eye candy, and that's what she was here.
Yeah. For me, 100%. It was more the afterwards of, like, people starting talking about her and sexualizing her on, like, on social media.
Yeah.
Rather than talking about her actual character.
And it's a tragic character when you think about what happens to her or what's portrayed to have happened to her. Because you see two parts of how it could have been, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have, like, the what people are saying happened and what realistically could have happened, but I'm not going to confirm for, you know, potentially legal reasons. So I think that was interesting. I did like that because Nolan played with perspective in this film with like black and white and color. You kind of saw two sides.
But at least for me, I enjoyed the film. I wasn't in love with it the way that everyone was online. I thought it was good. I did have some gripes with the screenplay. For some reason, I just couldn't get into the dialogue. But other than that, I mean, it's exhilarating. It's fun. Again, I was second row, so my molecules got rearranged during the runtime. It was an event.
When the bomb went off, your hair just flew back.
See, you were Betty Safdie. I was gone. I was gone with the bomb.
That's the sequel. Gone with the bomb.
Gone with the bomb. It's the sequel. God. But I will say, Benny Safdie was my favorite.
He was so surprising.
See, he was. Mira, hay que darle crédito. He ate up that role. He didn't have to, but he said, "I want to make more movies, so I need to cash this paycheck."
He was like, "A small role, okay, and I'll eat that role."
Yeah, but that wasn't that small. He ate.
Yeah, he did.
Mira, he he can handle a room. He's fine.
Yeah. He was cooking.
He was cooking.
Yeah.
And I feel his acting should get more into the discussion because, of course, Robert Downey Jr. is the one taking up most of the discussion for his supporting actors and mm-hmm. not taking anything away from him. This is probably his best role since joining the MCU.
Say.
But
they let Benny Robert Downey Jr. be Robert Downey Jr.
Literally. Like, watching it, I remembered that Robert Downey Jr. can act. And he's not just Iron Man.
It was a reminder of his talents.
Yeah.
It was refreshing to see, you know?
See. But Benny Safdie, I felt he was able to command every scene he was in. He was just there in the shadows. And I love how he was a counterpart to Cillian Murphy's Oppenheimer. And I loved the conflict between the two of them. And I thought he handled it well.
Yeah, and how the conflict just, like, goes back to the ending of the film.
Yeah.
To the big reveal at the end.
But also, sorry, I can mention at the Efina, and I just keep thinking about how Einstein just felt like an MCU cameo each time he showed up. Like, how long was he waiting behind that car before it drove away, and then he, like, walked over to Oppenheimer?
The fact that people, when he first showed on the screen, people started screaming at my theater. It was like, okay, guys, it's Einstein. Yeah.
But also, we need to shout out two kings from the movie. Mm-hmm. That is Josh and Roderick.
Yo, yeah. Roderick ruled. Yeah.
All the cameos in this movie from that white guys amazing. We've seen in the past.
That Josh was, Peck went off.
Just like, Josh name Peck that had
the
most guy.
Prestigious one. He got to press the button.
He flipped the switch on everyone.
But also, I think my favorite, like, white guy reveal was when they revealed who was playing the president. Because it's like, of course, who else would play the president other than Gary Oldman?
Yeah.
Look at the duality. A prime minister and a president. He can do it all.
He can.
When Barbie, Oppenheimer, and Fast X were all filming at the same time, if you weren't in any of those three films, you were probably unemployed. Not employed. But I will say, to join Josie on the Benny Safdie train, if you want to see another great performance of his that came out in a film this year, sidebar, check out Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret. I watched it on one of my flights. He gives a great performance here in Oppenheimer. I think this is going to be great reasons why he's going to get a lot more work going forward.
It wouldn't be surprising if he gets a leading role in the near future.
Oh, absolutely.
I hope he does.
Yeah.
He will. But there is one thing we haven't exactly talked about. The big reason why people went to go see Oppenheimer.
Boom.
The explosion scene.
Boom.
Which I thought was going to be like Final Destination 4, where the explosion actually went off in the movie theater. Like, I was terrified for my life, but I'm so glad it didn't happen.
How was the explosion in the IMAX theater? What was the experience
for? Oh, I saw God.
Imagínate yo en segunda fila.
Yo, I forgot that light goes faster than sun, and I was like, damn, that hit me like a rock right there.
Oh, yeah. My entire body vibrated. It was, I saw God in that movie. I was gripping the seat as if I was going down a roller coaster.
I had to close my eyes at one point because I'm like, I am not risking my 20/20 vision for this. This is a little too bright for me.
What was the explosion that cut you off guard? Like, in what scene? Because there were various scenes with it.
No, I think to be the one that caught me off guard was, like, when he was, like, during the speech where there's, like, the room full of people.
Same, yeah.
That one.
I'm sorry.
I flinched so hard in that one.
The part where he's walking into the room and you hear all the steps and they're all just, like, stomping and stomping, that got to me more than the explosions, to be honest, because you felt his anxiety at that time, and I was like, this is not what I signed up for.
One of the things I admired most about this movie was the sound design, because like how Anna said that light travels faster than sound, so it was a very accurate representation of what it's an explosion of that magnitude is actually like. Like, you won't hear the boom until after, and I really like that. that we were in silence for a long time, and then it's just like boom, and then it's like, oh shit, like this thing is like deadly, and it hits you all of a sudden. And I really like the way that they use sound in the film.
Also, the score has a really good score.
Oh my god, I have a banger.
Banger.
Whenever I'm working, I, at least not anymore, but at least those first few weeks after the both movies came out, if I'm working, I'll either listen to the Barbie score or the Oppenheimer score. It depends on what I'm working on. If it's something a little bit more fluffy, I'll listen to the Barbie score. If it's something more investigative journalism, we got Oppenheimer.
I love it.
There's something about the Oppenheimer's like soundtrack that it just scratches my ear so much.
It scratches that itch.
Yes.
But I'll see. What is everyone's final? Yeah. Or like, what did you rate this movie?
Yo, wait. Before, can we talk about how Emily Blunt was such a baddie? Okay.
Yes.
See, I will say, I wasn't as impressed as everyone was making out her role to be, because everyone immediately was like, Oscar for Emily Blunt, and I'm like, she only got one really great scene, and it's not her fault. I thought she commanded that scene. She was great.
Yeah.
It did not feel earned to me, and I'm not saying it because of her. I'm saying it because of the writing.
I could agree with that.
Yeah, I thought the female characters weren't paid as much attention into the duality and like all the everything about the characters, their layers and everything, as much as the men.
I 1000% agree with that.
No, you can't just give me that one badass scene and be like, see? Women. And I'm like, oh, Christopher Nolan.
It served its purpose, but at the same time, como que the satisfaction of the character, and also she also got the last scene with Benny Safdie where she didn't shake his hand.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, we get it.
I will say that scene, when I saw it, I was like impressed because you are giving Emily Blunt the reason to go, see? I am a great actress. Cast me in more things. But at the same time, like Josie said, because the females weren't paid as much attention, you're just like, okay, one good scene does not equate to everything else that this film could have added to it. But I will say, it is feeling like the typical Oscar clip scene that they play. It was like, best supporting actress, Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer.
You need to give us more than one.
1000%.
I think that one, I preferred the one because everyone's going crazy over that one. I really like the one about like, you don't get to commit the sin and make us feel bad for you.
Yes, that was a great part too.
Nah, but again, it's not against Emily Blunt. I think Emily Blunt is one of the greatest actresses we have right now. I think it's Nolan patting himself on the back for a really great and commanding scene when all these men had like five of those and she only had that one big one.
And also that's the problem with casting too many well-known actors in one film, and that's that everyone's going to be paying attention to everyone. Everyone's going to see what this person says, and then there's like less time on screen for everyone else. And it's kind of like, well, this kind of sucks a bit. This kind of sucks the air out of the room just a little bit. And I agree with you. I do think it's a screenplay issue.
Yeah, it's the screenplay, my god, because I think Nolan is a great director. The vision for this visually was great. I wish the script was better. You know what script I really liked this year? Asteroid City. But that's another episode. Either way, I think the movie's good, so I just gave it 4 out of 5.
Yeah, but okay, at the end it just feels like, okay, there was some screenplay issues, but it served his purpose with the specific scene. It's como que, okay, let me just do that scene and let me eat. Y ya.
I agree.
Lo poco que ella tenía como que al frente, she just like, I'll do the best that I can.
I agree with Josie on the rating. I went with a 4. In my case, my issues were the same. Screenplay and the issues I had with giving Florence Pugh top billing as she deserves, 100%. But then you don't give her and Emily Blunt the amount of scenes they need and deserve just to show like, hey, this is why we're the baddies. This is why we're the best. Because you know they're the baddies. You know they're the best. But they don't have enough scenes in here to be like, see, I'm on par. And it's like Josie said, it's a screenplay issue. And I think for a 3-hour film, even though I missed 25 minutes of it, and I didn't feel like I missed much, I felt that it ran by perfectly. As someone who wasn't excited to see this film, I'm glad I ended up liking it overall. I ended up getting Burger King afterwards because Wendy's was closed, and it kind of helped as the cigarette because I had a batida. I had like a nice little vanilla milkshake, and it helped.
I love
it. But I'm going to stick with a 4 for now. Maybe on a rewatch, I don't want to lower it, but I think it could stay at 4. And in my ratings of the year, it's not as high as everyone else has it. I agree with Josie. I do think a lot of people are going to have this higher up than I will. But I did at least appreciate what Nolan brought to the table visually. And I'm glad he took the big swing with IMAX and making it IMAX feel like a huge deal again.
Yeah, I agree. I gave it a 4. But the only reason that I didn't give it like a higher rating is because...
4 Squad. 4 Town. Sorry.
Yeah. 4 Town. After the explosion scene, como que enters the third act and you just don't know, okay, but now where is it going, you know? And I feel like there were some pacing issues afterwards with that.
Oh, see, I felt the same way. Once the explosion happened, I felt it did lose steam afterwards.
Yeah, I was like, what's going to happen now?
No, I don't want this to turn into the Oppenheimer discussion, but it was very difficult because... I wasn't as invested in the black and white portions about the investigation as much as the actual events. And again, it's a script issue. It's a freaking script issue.
It the movie was old leading up to the explosion. So after the explosion, we were like, okay, what's happening next? So I come, okay, the steam just blew off. I guess, but Robert Downey Jr. was good.
we were the little fishies at the end of Finding Nemo, like, now what?
But that's the only problem I have with the movie. Like, other than that, soundtrack, great, visuals, great, acting, amazing. Yeah.
I think I was the only poster that gave it a 5.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
This is no longer 4 from 4 Town.
I gave it a 5, and I actually have it ranked, spoiler alert, I have it ranked higher than Barbie on my top 10 of the year.
Oh, no.
You are a Nolan girl through and through.
I am a film bro at heart. What can I say? But, because... I totally agree. I had the same issues like post explosion, but the way the movie wrapped up just got to me. And giving it a 4 stars base like did not do justice to how the ending made me feel.
Well, that's a perfect segue for Barbie.
Absolutely. Because while Oppenheimer was the destroyer of worlds and we all had that post explosion clarity, we now have to discuss Barbie. It's a great segue. I'm sorry. So.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie. So let's talk about Barbie. This has had.
Hi, Ken.
Barbie, impact on pop culture. This is a blockbuster, and this is the summer blockbuster that got bigger than I think a lot of studios were expecting because we knew it was going to be a hit. We knew people were going to go out and support it. But to the degree that it is right now, the highest grossing film of the year worldwide, it has surpassed Super Mario Bros. Movie in itself, a moment, a huge win for gamers. And now Barbie has taken over the crown. And let's face it, brought back dressing up for the movie theaters. I think it also had a great impact on not only toy sales, because a lot of toy sales have gone up for this movie. But I feel like Barbie spoke to a lot of people and made them feel heard in terms of the messaging within this film, that they just really appreciated it. And it also showed that blockbusters can be fun and cool and sad at the same time while making you feel like you went through an entire cathartic experience. Now, I have to ask the posers, did Barbie work for you as in an impact on pop culture? Do you feel like... looking forward 5 years from now, you're going to remember Barbie in the way that we do right now.
It is a groundbreaking film. You can't take that away from it.
100%. I mean, Barbillion, Billion Dollar Club. I think it's right now one of the highest grossing films solely directed by a woman. Greta Gerwig making
facts.
History.
Big facts.
And it is still going.
The highest
Yeah, it's still going, and it's doing a re-release in IMAX since Oppenheimer had the IMAX for those weeks.
Yeah, as September 22, if I have the date correct.
See. Pero sí, I mean, it worked for me. I do have my issues with the film, but overall, I did enjoy it. I've seen it, I think, 6 times. No sé qué más decir. It worked for me. I liked it.
Yeah, I did too. I think I liked, because I've seen it twice, and I think I liked it. The second time that I saw it, I had more issues with it in terms of the scripts. Yes. So I still really loved it. I had a great time. The audience the second time around was definitely a lot better than the audience the first time, which was very disappointing. But everyone understood the assignment. Everyone was dressed in pink. Yeah, I think my favorite part that I'm still thinking about is just the I'm Just Ken musical number. I keep thinking about it. I keep playing that song. And I don't know, part of me wonders if maybe the movie would have been a lot better had it been fully a musical.
Maybe for a sequel there could be another musical number, but I mean, hopefully it's got a sequel. Hopefully. Because Greta Gerwig's going to be very busy coming up. But I will say, I've seen this film 4 times now. And for me, it was the party of the summer and the crying session of the summer. Like, for me,
oh, yeah, great. Absolutely.
The first time I saw it, again, the crowd cannot be beat. That was the best way I could have seen the film for the first time. That crowd, unbeatable. If you were at the Plaza Las Americas screening 6:10 p.m. the first day, you are all icons because you all made the experience so much fun. That is the way the movie should be seen. And I feel bad for the people who couldn't attend, but hey, I was there, so I can tell you all about it. And with Barbie, I feel the more I watch Barbie, the more I fall in love with it. I really get to appreciate more of the smaller details laced within the film. And a lot of experiences, a lot of aspects could be applied to real life experiences while reflecting on your journey growing up and appreciating the maternal figures in your life who nurtured your soul. In my case, I thought it was beautiful. It's cathartic. It definitely worked for me, but it also allowed me to laugh and to cry while the film places a hand on my back and tells me that it's like, it's going to be okay. And it allows you to take a breath. And that is something I feel cinema is supposed to do for audiences. And that's connect on a deeper level beyond just escapism.
With my experience, I only watched it one time. And yes, the theater was full with people wearing pink, but it was a little bit different because it was more like family oriented and there were like a lot of kids. There was only just one walkout and it was with like a family with their children. But I guess I understand why. They had to make their assignment, you know, before like seeing the movie. Pero además de eso, I laughed, I cried, I cringed. I truly enjoyed the movie a lot. I only have like one problem, which is also it has to do with the script and certain scenes. Pero como que nevertheless, como que me gustó mucho. I will definitely watch it again.
The second time I watched it, what added to the experience was that the theater I watched it in was fully decked out in Barbenheimer.
Oh, I love that.
Like, literally, they decked the entire theater. The employees were wearing Barbenheimer t-shirts. Like, the bathrooms were labeled Barbenheimer. It was insane that the cinema workers were really into it. And then when the people showed up all dressed in pink, like, it was just very hype, which was, like, the complete opposite than my first experience here.
Sí, I was so sad porque I wore pink. My first Barbie screening was here in Puerto Rico, and everyone wore pink for that. But also, it was mostly like influencers in that screening, so my friend and I did not feel safe. The vibes were off. Yo. But the second time I saw it was in New York, and I was the only one who was fully committed with my pink jumpsuit. And I love it. Yeah, each time I saw it again, the vibes just deteriorated. So I wish I'd had a good theater going experience because I did not have what everyone was having with Barbenheimer. Like, this dude pulls out his phone during the I'm Just Ken scene.
Excuse Me?
Next to me. And, yeah, and then when they all left, it was a bunch of dudes, and they left, like, their drinks in the cup holders. Yo, get out of here. You mojo dojo casa hoes.
Literally.
Pero sí, it was very, like, the Ken Dream Ballet is happening, and you're pulling out your phone, get out of here. Now, I had really bad movie-going experiences, so I think that might have tainted a little bit my perception on the film. But I think my issues go far beyond that. Pero sí, I wish I'd had the experience everyone had, because I dressed up. I was committed. Yeah. And people around me weren't.
Yeah.
That's sad. Because the first time I saw it, I had my full Barbie outfit, my full pink outfit. But then the second time, I was in Oregon, so I didn't pack my Barbie outfit because I was not expecting a Barbie emergency. So I was wearing purple. Mm-hmm. But everyone else was committed. And I felt like the outsider because I was wearing purple instead of pink. But the vibes were good.
I will say, in my third screening, I had a similar experience to Josie, because the guys that were sitting next to me, one of them brought their girlfriend and he brought his two friends. And she was, you could tell she was trying to enjoy the movie, and they were being assholes about it, like being like, yeah. Whoa! And they were like cheering in like the wrong parts, and we're all just like, I swear I'm gonna punch this guy. And
it's so annoying. Barbie is now a litmus test for, like, if you should dump that guy.
Oh, I think she dumped him afterwards. Maybe. I think the girl dumped him.
Good for her.
Like, I hope so. Low key, I hope she did. Because she was crying during the final scenes where you cry. Mm-hmm. And I think the guys in front of her, that was the guy's friends, were trying to make fun of her a bit with their tears. No, I couldn't tell if they were being genuine or not.
This is not a date movie. You go with your friends, you go in a safe space, you have fun.
I mean, I hope she's okay. I hope she ended up dumping him or something, or like clearing her friends. But honestly, I do agree that how your experience goes will determine if you end up loving this film more. Because again, my experience, they handed out posters for free. Someone got like the movie size poster, and I could tell it was someone who was not going to frame it properly. I'm sorry. But they just weren't.
We
got these little posters. They were throwing out posters left and right. It was kind of really cool. Oh. The merchandise sold out really fast, like 4 hours. But I'm glad I got a Barbie bucket.
I really wanted the Barbie, like, beach ball.
Yo, that sold out so fast.
Uh-huh. I do.
It was
first
insane.
Day, just sold out.
3 hours, apparently. That's all it took. Mm-hmm. That's what I got told. 3 hours in where I was seeing it. And I was upset. Because I know a couple people who wanted it.
See, y después como que the marketing itself within the theater, because in Caribia Cinema, all of the employees were dressed in pink with their little pink ties. I was like, okay, yes. This is cool. And they were like, you feel like, como que, like they were like joining the bandwagon too.
Oh yeah, you could tell when someone doesn't want to take a photo in their outfit, but everyone looked like they genuinely wanted to be there and have fun. And you could tell that some people were definitely treating the employees with more respect than they would normally do.
Yeah.
And they were being more considerate. And I think that adds to the experience. Like, that makes it more fun for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And now going with the line of experience itself, I think while watching the movie, because in my theater, again, they were kids, a lot of kids. So when it came down to, like, jokes or so, like, there wasn't a lot of reactions to it. So I don't know if your experience were, like, different or people were reaction.
I mean, in terms of kids?
No, but I mean, like, in your audience. Like, the audience that you had within the theater when you saw it.
The first two times, the first time everyone got the joke, everyone was laughing. The second time, some people were very much more dry about it, but they did end up applauding at the end. I just don't think they got it. The third time, I was the only one laughing at one point, and I was like, y'all are not laughing. These jokes are funny. So I think as each time I saw it, I think less people were into it as much.
It hurts.
It hurts, yeah.
It hurts my soul, because it happened to me in that second screening. I was laughing at all the jokes, because, Mira, regardless, again, I do have my issues with the movie, but it's funny. The humor is smart. It's not dumb. It's clever. Hilarious. And when people don't laugh when they're supposed to, it hurts my soul. Especially whenever Alan comes on. I love him. Alan is the MVP. Release the Alan cut.
Full. You're 100%. Let her cook. Let Josie cook.
Keep going, Josie.
No, but like, I really loved Alan. It made me believe in Michael Cera again. And then it's funny because I watched Batman, the Lego movie, like the Lego Batman movie after seeing Barbie. Oh, and I found out that he voices Robin. And I was like, really? Let the Michael Cera renaissance arrive, please. He's such a good Robin and such a good Alan. No, pero it's funny because his team almost passed on the role. And he was like, no, get them on the So he is the Alan we deserve. He was committed.
That was part of my theory. Because you know how Greta Gerwig casts her children, Saoirse Ronan and Timothy Chalamet.
Sí. No entiendo, because Timothy Chalamet was on set and she's like, oh, their schedules were too busy so they couldn't be in the film for a cameo. And I'm like, but he was on set.
He visited the set and said something. Oh, that's the thing. I read a report that said he visited the set and then was like, damn, I should have been in this.
I should have been in this. Dude, you're already on the set.
Literally.
So they could come in the background.
Just a little hi, Barbie, would have been fine.
It's just like the John Cena situation that he was just, I think he was like near the set and he just came by and they gave him the role.
Oh no, he was like, he was cast.
He was cast?
He was cast. Like, he was cast early on. I knew because I've been following the backstage.
Yeah. And because Greta, like, yeah, I'm not their mother, but Saoirse Ronan and Timothy Chalamet are my children. And she wanted them in the film. Like, ya ellos tenían rol si lo querían. El problema es que por conflicto de scheduling, because they were both filming stuff, which I think, considering how everything's timing up, maybe Saoirse Ronan was filming Foe with Paul Mescal.
Yeah.
Y Timothy Chalamet tenía, obviamente, Dune and Wonka. So they were just
I think
busy.
It was more Wonka. I think it was more Wonka because I knew that had reshoots.
They were busy. Punto y fin.
But again,
he says he's on the set, and I'm like, sir, you could have been in the background.
I think Timothy Chalamet's role was originally going to be Alan, low key. Because if it wasn't Alan, I don't think it would have been like Simu Leo or someone within that group. I kind of think it would have been Alan.
I'm Michael Cera. I would not switch Michael Cera.
I wouldn't either. I agree. Is Alan. He is Alan. But for a moment, like pre Michael Cera getting the role and Greta wanting to cast Timothy Chalamet, I kind of thought she would have seen him as Alan. And I think the one who got John Cena the role was Margot Robbie, because Margot Robbie was low-key a fan of John Cena during WWE, which is a great tip that I get to share. So she had a John Cena, I don't know if it was a poster or a standee, but she was a fan of his, and they worked in the Suicide Squad, and I genuinely believe Margot Robbie recommended John Cena for the role.
And it makes
just for the quick cameo.
Because she's the producer, so.
Which, more power to her. She took a big risk on this film by pitching it as a $1 billion film.
Y se le dio. Se le dio.
Y se le dio. As it should.
Manifested.
She manifested.
She's a great producer.
I agree. I feel she should be producing a little bit more, although I want her to keep acting.
I mean, she's already done so many things, and I'm glad that she's just going to keep going. But Ryan Gosling.
For sure.
Sublime.
Ryan Gosling.
Sublime.
The people who doubted him, I still can't believe people would be like, ew, why is he going to be Ken? It's like, y'all clearly did not see the nice guys. And it shows.
The doubters were silenced.
As they should. From doubting his abilities to now being potentially the front man for best supporting actor at the Oscars. This is the 180 we like to see.
Yes. My job is just beach.
Beach.
What a good job you do at
beach. I thought he was perfect. I think this couldn't have been a better cast role. He was born to play Ken.
I keep doing his little dance from the Dance the Night sequence. I keep doing the little dance. Like, his facial expressions during that entire scene were just so golden.
I bet you everything can't do that, Ken. It. I was like, what?
I wanna push you around. Well, I will. Well, I will.
He was the best thing. I'm sorry, but I feel like he was the best, like, that came out from the movie.
Same.
Every time he was on the screen,
I agree.
I enjoyed it a lot.
I agree.
He fully committed.
But he stand out.
But I also love his chemistry with Margot Robbie, who I feel deserves a little bit of praise, too, because ella se votó. She was so good at playing stereotypical Barbie. She just, like Josie said, they committed. Like, if you're going to do Barbie, yeah. mm-hmm. you have to commit to just being down to do anything. And this cast understood that and was willing to go as far as Greta Gerwig wanted them to go. And
I think also tell that they had fun.
Yeah. Like, you see the behind the scenes and you can tell that everyone's genuinely having fun.
Pero sí, stereotypical Barbie, Margot Robbie, is the aromantic, asexual representation we deserve. Good day.
You know what? Yeah. I see it. I agree. I would agree with that. But I will fight. I also love the scene where she's like, don't worry, that's still stereotypical Barbie. She's just having an existential crisis. And she's like, I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm not pretty enough. And then Helen Mirren comes in as the voice of God.
Oh, my God,
to the
yes.
producers yes. that choosing Margot Robbie to deliver this line was a like, come on. Margot Robbie is not the right choice to say this line. Like, come on. That is genius.
Yes.
That's where I just stood up and started applauding like it was the AMC intro by Nicole Kidman. Like, that yeah. was it for me. That's what I was like, yep. Yeah,
but that
best
being
picture.
Said, there are parts of the film that don't work. And I know, Anna, you yes. had mentioned stuff you would have taken out.
Yeah. Okay, as much as, like, I had fun with the whole Mattel and Will Ferrell scenes, I feel that if you take those parts out of the movie, it's just the movie keeps on going. Like, there's no need.
But where would we have put Speed Drive by Charlie XCX?
Okay, yeah. Pero como que just think about it. Es que se sintió como que it was just there, you know?
I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
I may not agree as much because I did understand the point of it. But I also love that scene not only gave us the great chase scene, but the introduction to Ruth. I really loved that in the Mattel building. And again, mm-hmm. if you're going to do a Mattel property, it kind of made sense that you had to address Mattel at one point besides the very definition of what See. Barbie used to stand for.
Yeah, but it just felt like, okay, so we need a plot point or something to move, you know, Barbie and again to Barbie land.
To Barbie land, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just, oh, let's just have Mattel, como que, you know, do the set way for them to go back there. So como que it felt
See,
almost
like I can you could have focused less yeah. on yeah. Mattel itself and focused more on Ruth and yes. her relationship with modeling Barbie after her daughter, which is mm-hmm. what I think the film was lacking in. Because the whole point of the film, of course, guys, if you're listening this far, you know that we're going to discuss spoilers. pero hay una parte en la película where she delivers that line that everyone loves, which is like, mother stand still so daughters can look back and see how far they've come. And
that breaks me every time. I'm sorry.
It's the thesis of the film, yet it feels out of place. So I think we should have dealt more with like the mother-daughter relationships and especially America Ferrera's role as a mom with her daughter in the film. So Gloria and Sasha, it was fixed too easily. Mm-hmm. And that should have been like the main point of the film because Barbie was supposed to go back to the real world to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back to Barbie land to help her. But she never did what she was supposed to. I don't know.
But I also feel like if we would have gone, there would have been a way to do that 100%, but it would have had to be very careful because or else you would have crossed into it being life-size with Tyra Banks and Lindsay Lohan, which also dealt, if I remember correctly, with a mother-daughter situation and how they solved that throughout. So it would have been a bit more of a balancing act. Yeah, exactly. It's very tricky.
But then that leaves this movie a little bit unbalanced on that front. Because Sasha just changes her mind suddenly. She's like, we have to go back for Barbie. And it's like, you just called her a fascist 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. And suddenly, like the mom and daughter, if their relationship was fixed, and they didn't have, like, a moment with each other, you know? It just felt like, oh, we went to Barbie land and it got fixed.
I think I would have liked a wholesome moment between the two for sure.
Yeah.
But I think in that moment, she also realized that her mom is not the version she saw. And she started to understand her a little bit more. Like, because she even said in the car, you're weird. And you do all these drawings and they're cool. And she started to, like, wake up a bit. So I do appreciate that part. But I agree. I think a moment between the two would have been just a lovely cherry on the top. Even though I love the Bratz reference. with Sasha and her friends because they're all named after the brats.
Yeah, it gives us
that was a clever so nod.
Yeah, it was so quick, but I mean, it was so quick that you couldn't just like fully indulge in it.
But when you try to cover so much too, and there's so much to cover with Barbie, not only as a property, but within the spectrum of the film itself, you could only do so much without getting into the Nolan 3-hour runtime. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think they wanted to keep it at a concise runtime and they could only do this much. Even though if they wanted to tell me Barbie was going to get a 3-hour cut, would have included all of this, I would have sat through it. I would have sat through it. For Greta Gerwig, 100%. But with what they did, I think it worked for me. I think it worked. I know it worked for me, but I 100% see where all of you are coming from, for sure.
Now, como que, like, you know, segue away to que estábamos hablando de la mamá. What do you guys think about the monologue that she did?
Okay. I'll rip the band-aid very quickly. It felt like I read this online. So this isn't coming from me, but I was like, yes, preach, speaker truth. Someone said it felt like an Instagram infographic on feminism and that it felt dated. And I agree. It feels like something we would have heard in 2010. Now, I also saw on Twitter someone defending it saying, I'm not going to call it X, by the way, you guys.
No, her mama named her Twitter. I'm going to call her Twitter.
Oh, yeah, Twitter.
So on Twitter, someone was saying that the monologue felt like an introduction to feminism to people that haven't had access to it.
Damn.
Yeah. So yeah. So it does feel kind of basic. It can be opening the door to people that are growing up, that new generation that's trying to learn about these things. Yeah. It's not for us, but it felt like people were trying to market it and like for everyone, and that it was some groundbreaking thing, but it's not. So It did not resonate with me as much as it did with other people, because again, it just didn't feel like anything we haven't heard before.
I think I was also discussing about it with some friends because we had the same thoughts about it, about people saying that, oh, like I'm going to recite America Ferrera's monologue like the Bible each night, and it's like, but why? You know, it feels so basic and it's like nothing new. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, my friend mentioned the exact same thing, because it's like, you know, a lot of people still don't realize have never had the proper introduction to feminism. So then seeing this is like what's going to help them hopefully like learn about it. Still like, yeah, it was kind of cringy. I cringed, not going to lie.
It could be okay, like that monologue felt like, okay, let's do a mini crash course.
Yeah.
And let's just say everything. Yeah, como que.
And then just like repeating the same thing to all the Barbies, I was like, why is that the cure?
Yeah, como que, I do agree with you guys. Como que, it's for people that haven't even like heard about it in the first place. But como que, the way that it's said, the tone, it just feels like Tumblr era for me.
Very Tumblr, like early 2000s Tumblr. Feels like something that would be in like a made-for-TV rom-com.
Yeah.
The main character from How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days would probably write that in her magazine.
Okay, like, I appreciate the intention, but yeah. I feel that the execution wasn't the greatest.
Yeah. And then it also, maybe it's like a writer thing, but it also bothers me how it just ends with America Sarah then saying, I don't know. And then it just stops. I'm like, why did it end there? Like, I don't know.
I am going to be the nota discordante. I love the monologue. But I see where all three of you are coming from, 100%. However, I call this film the tightrope walk when it comes to the script, because you don't want to alienate the entire male gender either, in a way. And I think they were trying to focus on that. Like, how can I include everyone while also letting people know? Because we are in a world where this is a message that will not be perceived as well by some people. Let's leave it at that. And they wanted to feel respectful, but they also want to get their point across and also mention how this is what Barbie used to stand for. This is how it's changed, but this is how each generation sees themselves, not only in a doll, but also in reality, because everything is changing. So I personally appreciated the approach they took of trying to get to everything while not, you know, stepping on everyone, because some people could be like, oh, it's preachy. It doesn't feels like it's attacking me, but it's not an attack.
No, it's supposed to let feminism accessible.
And in a world where it doesn't feel like people want to learn, I kind of feel like it was brave enough to take the first step to be like, yo, get on board in your case. Because I know a couple of people who I'm sure, I'm not going to name them, but I'm pretty sure I know one or two people who will probably not like this message. And I think it's going to be something that you're going to have to explain to them and be like, look, I wasn't trying to offend you. It was trying to make you see what the world really looks like right now and how you can be a part of the solution, not the problem. But I would agree that maybe a monologue like Florence Pugh's in Little Women, where it talks about how if I were a woman, I would be the same, as a man.
We've seen what Greta is capable of with empowering monologues. Like Florence's and then Saoirse Ronan's in the same movie.
And that's the thing.
Emma Watson's saying that just because my dreams are different than yours doesn't mean they're not valid.
Beanie Feldstein and Lady Bird saying some people aren't built happy.
Yes.
But that's the thing, we are comparing Lady her past Bird. Works.
Maybe what if this is the best version of me?
Oh, that that breaks me. Yes.
She's so good at this. We got those moments in Barbie. She like saying, I'm so tired y todo eso, y como que I'm not good enough. We got that. Monólogo. I think it's not the monologue itself. I think it's the way people were talking about it as if it was this groundbreaking thing when it wasn't. It was good writing, pero
as we come to expect from Greta Gerwig,
it changed. Yeah, it did not change feminism forever.
No. But I do think it does push it forward for more people to get on board. Because again, not everyone is on board, and personally, everyone should be. But it does open up the conversation. I don't think it pushes anything more groundbreaking. I think it's a beautiful monologue in terms of how it's written and how it can be delivered and how it's accessible for everyone. Like you said, it could be applied to younger. It could be applied to those who maybe don't have a stance on feminism and gives them a perspective. But it's not the most revolutionary speech ever. But it is one of the films more emotional moments, because it did get to people. Like the first time I saw that scene, everyone in my theater clapped. Actually, I think I know two people who missed the monologue, but everyone essentially clapped.
Funnily enough, the scene that got the most cheers the first time I saw it was the gynecologist line, which I think was iconic.
Oh yeah,
that was amazing. Oh yeah,
that scene got the most claps.
I think it's funny how film Twitter realized that set leak, what it was meant for. Of her dressed in like normal people clothing. It's like, why is she dressed in normal people if she's Barbie? Sees the movie. Oh. I think that's kind of hilarious. That's sometimes the beauty of set leaks. But you know what was a beautiful emotional scene? Barbie and Ruth scene where
with Billie Eilish in the
background. Billie Eilish
in the background.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to remember the song's name. I was like,
What was I made for?
What was I made for? Yes.
What was I made for? There you go.
If you're on TikTok, it's everywhere.
I love that scene. Low key. I think that was beautiful.
Yeah.
I cried so much.
Oh yeah.
I'm so sorry for the people next to me. Yeah, I was bawling my eyes out.
I wasn't apologizing. I was like, you're gonna handle me at me losing it my shit for this film. Because it is beautiful.
But I mean, the beauty of that scene is how just Barbie, just, you know, when she's doing like having those flashbacks of women and children. Yeah, come on, guys. She just finds the beauty in ordinary things, and that's what she wants. And that's like the human experience. Either come on, that monologue and that quote, and I was like, Mama, I'm a wreck right now.
No, yeah, that line, I watched that film with my mom, I think, twice now. And I cried in front of her both times. Like, it was just beautiful. Oh, yeah. I think, again, it makes you appreciate the maternal figures in your life.
Yeah.
And how they've been there for you and how they've nurtured you and raised you. And I think that was the beauty of the ending. And if you know me, you know I didn't love No Time to Die by Billie Eilish. I didn't like the song. This song, however,
it's great. Yeah,
I understood why people are the way they are with her. That I was just like, this is beautiful. This, if you would have told me that won her the Oscar, I would have said, understandable. I believe you. I don't doubt it. The other song, not so much. But back to Barbie. It kind of feels like the perfect symphony to end the film that leads to the ending and how it resolves Margot Robbie's character of Barbie and everything she goes through. And you see that beautiful montage of the women, and one of them being one of the women Margot Robbie sees on the bus stop. You kind of see her in the montage. And that was beautiful.
I think that's what got to me the most about the movie, is her choosing to be a human despite like all the ugliness that there is in the world, because she managed to find like the beauty in it despite everything.
And even then, that kind of felt like what Barbie was to a generation, and mothers passing down Barbies to their daughters and to their kids in general, and making them feel that sense of joy, that sense that they could be anything. And so many things that you explore throughout the film and you realize about it, that you're just like, wow, it packs that punch because of the journey you went through. I just think it's beautiful. I could watch that scene over and over again and cry, and that's fine. It's a beautiful cathartic moment.
Yeah, and it's also, there's also the juxtaposition of Barbie Land and the human world. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, her como que, like, flashing before her eyes, just like human world, y como que, again, going back to being ordinary, rather than in Barbie Land, everybody had a role. But here are just people talking, playing, going to school, you know?
100%.
Yeah. I have a point, but I thought it was really interesting that because I read it somewhere. Going back to the whole Barbenheimer discussion, it's the difference of womanhood that we find in Oppenheimer and in Barbie. And especially represented in Emily Blunt's character, and how different she is to Barbie. And that is something that we see, you know, two complete sides of feminism and womanhood in, you know, in one weekend.
Yeah, but I feel where Nolan could have added more. Maybe he wasn't the right person to write that script, like we had talked about. Maybe he needed a little bit more help to define those female characters, and there's no shame in that whatsoever. Yeah. I feel Greta captured more of the female experience than Nolan, and you put them side by side, and yeah, they're two halves of a coin, different time periods, different scenarios for sure. But in a way, it does feel like, yeah, you are choosing sides. Which one do you like more? Sure. You can also find things to appreciate in both. And you do feel like maybe some parts are better than others. That's just what it is.
But yeah, it is kind of nice. For example, with Oppenheimer, there's a discussion about motherhood. Now she's probably going through postpartum. And we don't really dive into that because the movie isn't about that. But I felt we could have gotten a little bit more.
Yeah, and how, like, again, in Barbie, there's this discussion of motherhood, and motherhood is so treated, like, so different with Oppenheimer and Emily Blunt's character, and there's a scene where she doesn't even want children, you know? So it's como que different, like, like spectrums of it, if you could say? Question mark? Yeah.
You do see two different spectrums, and you do, again, two sides of the same coin.
Motherhood is a spectrum, mama.
Mama.
For sure. And again, you can find things to appreciate in both. And you can like both films, 100%. You can say you like one more than the other. Also great. But at the end of the day, I think what Barbenheimer has managed to accomplish, it's that it's made this feel like more than a conversation. It allows us to take stuff from these films, apply it to real life, and realize like, whoa, this captures something I see here in a totally different way than maybe I was expecting. And I feel in that sense, Barbenheimer is quite successful as an event, more than just cinema. It was an event, and either you were a part of it or you weren't. And even then, even if you end up watching these films down the line, which I think is a mistake, I think we can all agree, if you're going to see one, if not both of these films, it should be in a theater. These films were made for the theatrical experience. You do miss out on the conversation, but you also can appreciate what they brought to the table, especially for summer blockbusters. I don't think there's been this much passion for summer blockbusters in so much time. Like, everyone expects a Marvel movie to show up, or another Disney film, or another studio film that has a big budget that maybe it won't recoup. But these two films just made everyone feel excited to go to the movies again. I think that's amazing. To conclude our Barbie talk, what are your final ratings for Barbie?
I give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Okay.
I also gave it a 4.5.
I gave it a 5. Despite everything, I had fun.
I also gave it a 5. I think, again, visually it's amazing. This is a lock for production and costume design. And I don't like talking about Oscars anymore. But for these two films, I would pay attention for award season, which is also exciting.
If you don't give Barbie production design, what was it all for? Yeah. But at least now we know that in the Barbenheimer battle, even though there wasn't a battle to begin with, at least for this discussion, clearly Barbie is the winner amongst the posters. Yeah,
for sure. And because it was a celebration of cinema, and I think that's great. One quick note with Barbie, the music, loved it, but whoever's in charge of the music, you could have gotten Villano Antillano. That's all I'm saying. Villano Antillano, hubiera partido. She would have been amazing. And if you do not know who she is, Carol G, get onto
it. And they said, we did it. And we're like, what did you do?
Villano Antillano literally is la top model de Mattel. Come on. It's right there. Yeah. And Trixie Mattel, too, should have been in this film, either on the soundtrack or within the film, if not both.
But I was happy to see her on the pink carpet.
That felt like a consolation prize, to be honest. I was glad she was there. But I know,
but I'm at least happy she was in the red, in the pink carpet.
For sure. You couldn't do the carpet without her. Bare minimum, but Barbie, too, she needs to get on the phone. They need to give her the call and be like, you're in the film. Here are the rules. Which one do you want? And honestly, if they do make a Barbie 2, which would you all be on board for a Barbie 2? Because we know there's no Oppenheimer 2. If there's a Barbie 2, would you be on board?
I mean, there is an Oppenheimer 2. It's called Grave of the Fireflies.
Damn. Not in my mind. I'm not sitting through that again. Mm-mm. Once was enough. you don't have to think about what the plot could be, but if Greta Gerwig was fully behind it.
I'm hesitant. Just because the movie made a bunch of money and it was well received doesn't mean it needs a sequel.
No, tell that to the
studios. Leave it as a standalone. Leave it as a standalone.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, don't we don't need it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a second Alan movie.
Well, I mean, they do want to make a Ken movie. Like a Ken spinoff movie. That's what I've heard. That's why I asked, because, you know, Warner Bros. is gonna try to pop these out. Again, they made money. So Warner Bros. Right away be like, sequel, even though we haven't gotten a Crazy Rich Asian sequel, which we are overdue.
I mean, Barbie was basically the Ken movie, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like when you come out of the movie, you're thinking about Ken more. So do we really need a Ken movie?
I mean, I'll take whatever film that's going to bring back fun. I love a film that makes me want to have fun. So as long as it's fun, as long as it's got the right people attached to it, I would be down. I think if Greta Gerwig says, I want to make a Barbie too, and she's passionate about it, and she's not forced into the conversation, and she doesn't feel like she's forced to make a Barbie too, then I'm down. Because I don't want any director to feel pressured to have to do a sequel. I'd love a Barbie too, because I'd love to recapture this moment. in a sequel, especially because I had ideas and some thoughts, which could, again, be a future episode. If you want one, let us know. But I feel because Greta's going to be so busy and this did so much for her career, and we may be seeing this at the award season this year, let's be honest, the conversation is going to keep going. There is that door slightly open of like, maybe there could be, but I think, as you've told, yes, you can tell from our discussion, the script would need to be a bit more tighter just to fully regain, like, capture lightning in a bottle twice.
But hey, she's gonna do Narnia now, so
yes.
For Netflix, though, I kind of feel like that should have been in the theaters. Maybe we'll do a Narnia episode, who's to say.
It oh is Greta Gerwig. We should do an Narnia episode.
To prepare for the film later on. But you know what? That is all for today's episode. And we'd like to thank you all for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Where can they find you, posers?
You can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
And you can find me on Twitter as Anna_Sophia53 and on TikTok as Anna_Sophia533.
And you can find me at the Josie Marie on Twitter and Letterboxd.
And you can find me on Twitter, Letterboxd, and TikTok at Leading Mohicans. Yes, I joined TikTok. I know it's been a long time coming and I do not regret it at all. But we'd like to thank you again for listening. And remember, we are all film posers. Bye.
Bye. Bye.